So you know how I cruise like Facebook Marketplace, like besides three times a day, but like, I mean, like right before I go to bed?
Yeah, I try to take my breaks between my sessions of searching over there, but yeah.
All right. So like, it's crazy to me that there are RB26 long blocks that are selling for over $20,000.
Nah, that can't be right.
That's real.
$20,000?
Over 20 grand.
I just was bidding on a car in Cars and Bids not too long ago, and it only sold for $24,000 for a 2022 Elantra N. And you're telling me that those engines are just going for $20,000?
Well, okay. Oh, I mean, your Elantra N one came out of left field only because, like, I mean, I get the comparison to a car to an engine, but what I'm saying is, like for flat out, like GTRs, you know, they're still going for a lot of money, right? So everything appreciated, but. I mean, the fact of the matter is, I mean, like, you know, there's other engines that can make a great deal of horsepower. I mean, you know, is it a nostalgia thing? It's
who is putting that kind of money out there just to get that kind of, you know, the engine? I don't know. It doesn't kind of seem right to me.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think there's going to be a few people, right? Obviously. Oh, wow. Look.
That's Maxine crazy. Found one.
But like, so here's the thing. Like, I mean, that's a fully built RB26, although... Yeah. I have this thing about buying built engines. They scare me.
Why?
Well, because when you buy a built engine, you're essentially trusting, one, that everybody has, like, what he's telling you is actually in the engine, actually has been built with the engine, right?
Right.
And, like, you know, you're buying, it's like, you know, like, think about it like this. Like, I used to be so envious of the clutch companies when you went to a show, right? Because I knew a lot of these clutch companies. And they would find the dopest car in the world, and they would just slap their sticker on the side of it, right? It didn't really matter if the clutch was in the car,
because
how could you tell?
You can't.
Right? So, but like, that was the thing. Like, they would find whatever car, say, hey, yeah, it's got our clutch in it. We're using the triple disc in this, or whatever. And you would be like, what do you got in there? You know, like,
right.
And I used to be so envious, because like, with us, we couldn't get away without having a show car, or a project car, or, you know, a display car that didn't have our wheels on it.
Right.
Like, you had to go through that stuff. It's just too obvious, right? So, you know, I think that, you know, it's just one of those things where you don't know what's inside this engine. Like, you're trusting when they say they have this piston, this rod, this, you know, like, and so I just don't believe in doing that. And then there's the other major piece, which is, you know, you're always going, even if they have the paperwork that says who built the engine, right? You know, there's always this thing, like, is it the actual engine? Like, is it, you know, hopefully they're serial numbered or something like that, so it's on the receipt, or, but like, you know, you just don't know, like, you know, it's built by some local machine shop, not, you know, who knows?
I can't get past the price on that, I must tell you, but
really?
Kind of, I mean, who's it going for? I mean, if you're the type of guy who has a GTR.
Yeah.
If you have a GTR and you're looking for that engine because it's correct,
yep.
Like, do you think that people with, like, GTSTs are looking for that? I mean, I don't know.
Well, look, I mean, I think that the way cars became nostalgic and now you're looking at a lot of guys spending a lot of money on, you know, R32, 33, 34 GTRs, right?
I saw some good ones going for some decent prices online, I must say.
Wait, what? Which ones?
33 GTR. So one sold for 42.
The problem I have—that's
not bad.
No. It's listen. If you found me a clean R33 GTR for 40 grand, I would take it in a heartbeat.
I mean, that was very recently when that one sold. So I mean, that's pretty good.
I don't believe that these cars are as clean as they're depicted, right? The problem I have with those cars is I think the average going price for an R33 GTR at this date, right now, as we're talking about it. That is clean and is a desirable thing without having crazy something to it, crazy high mileage, whatever, is about $60,000 to $65,000. Okay, so you're right in that, you know, 09.
And you're telling me 20 of that's in the engine.
Well, you know, it's an interesting point.
Right?
Yes, I mean, yes.
That's weird.
I mean, I'm going to say yes. Well, I mean, look, you know, you're buying numbers matching things. You're buying. That's not the right word. It's not number of magic. You're buying objects that have a nostalgic value and a limited number that are relevant, right? Mm-hmm. The more rare something becomes, the more it becomes worth in value, majority of the time.
Yeah. Even with some of the lower end stuff, that's like how all of a sudden now the B series motors are becoming more expensive than K series motors. Very weird.
Well, look, I mean, I think you got, and so even like going back to the B series things, right? Like you're looking at, an area where some of these people are buying them for nostalgic, right? the idea of having nostalgia, having a period correct piece, trying to do something because it just feels cooler, right? Why do people shop at vintage stores or retro stores? I mean, there's some chairs that my grandmother probably gave away that now people are buying in, you know, some, you know, in Weehawken and Soho for $1,000 a chair.
I get it. So do you think that maybe the, like, everything across the board, whether it's chairs or engines, do you just think that things were maybe just made better in the past and now people are kind of seeing the value in that as opposed to maybe more modern day stuff?
No, I don't think that's all of it, right? Like, I believe that a lot of this has to do with the fact that there's this thing of, as things become more rare, as things get a little older, there's a nostalgic element to it. And I think people are willing to pay for that.
But you don't think that it's like someone's like, oh, this is a handmade USA made oak chair, and they don't make that stuff like that anymore. Now it's all, you know, bullcrap manufactured, you know, let's say China stuff or whatever.
I am positive that there are situations that exist. I'm not saying that. I agree with you. I understand.
Yeah.
But I guess what I'm saying is that, like, do I think that, you know, the reason somebody's spending $20,000 on an RB26 is because they believe that that engine is far superior, you know, to, let's say, a VR38
mm-hmm.
that comes out of a new R35 GTR? No, I don't believe that. I believe that it's a period correct thing, or they have a car.
You don't think the RB26 is a better engine?
Better engine than the VR38? I think there's a sliding scale here.
Yeah.
I would say, from a technological standpoint, I'm going to say no. I'm going to say the RB is not as good as a VR38.
And when you start dumping money into it, I guess I would argue to say it is. That's what I would probably say.
Well, I think money is the great equalizer.
Yeah.
Right? I believe that you get to a point where you can build either engine up to be extremely powerful, and those are both have proven cases.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
You can find the example of an RB or a VR being able to have, you know, 12, 13, 1400 horsepower, right? Those obviously are not run-of-the-mill engines. Do I think that, you know, out of the box, you know, look, what made 2Js and what made RBs so good was the fact that you could, out of the box, with just certain modifications, without ripping the internals apart, you could make a fair amount of horsepower,
mm-hmm.
right? But when we say fair amount of horsepower, and I know people will argue this point because you could always have that friend that made 800 or whatever it is, but you're talking about, like, because the car is out of the box, made, you know, maybe 4 or 5, maybe 600 horsepower, really not talking about how prolonged they were at making that power or how much they were used in that power range or how much boost they were seeing continuously. Yeah,
they talk about the peak.
They talk about the peak and, like, look, I mean, like, I'll be honest with you. I have done, I have tuned a almost 600 wheel horsepower stock GSX bottom end with some head work and a big turbo. Now, that's a lot of horsepower for that car that should not make it on a bottom end.
Mm-hmm.
Do I think it happened long? No, I don't believe so. I believe, you know, you sometimes the stars align and you get some good pulls and you get it there. I don't think it's a responsible way, and I don't think it's a maintainable way. But for people watching on YouTube, my face is not really red. Max got a red light over there.
I think it's funny though when you take a look at, like, people out of the track or people that we work with that we see their cars and stuff like that. Yeah. That I feel like there's just kind of like a common denominator that all these people are running engines, you know, and whatever that probably date back to 15 years plus, and it just makes me kind of think that, like, I don't know if, like, there's any new stuff that really is.
But aren't most of those cars 15 years plus too?
I guess so. I mean, so what? But no one wants to drop one of the newer engine in their cars today, or at least it seems that way from when you look out at the paddocks, you know.
Well, look, I think that's a good point, but I also think that there has to be this level of, you know, look, we're through that level of nostalgia, and the reason things are creeping up in price the way they are is because they're becoming more rare and harder to get,
mm-hmm.
right? And it becomes a statement, not just from a, I want this for power. It becomes a flex statement when you put an RB into an S chassis when you put it. Do you understand what I'm saying? When you put an RB into a 350Z, it's a kind of a, like, I don't, like, not too many people do this. Let me show you, and I'm using a big dollar engine. It's almost like that, right? To an extent, because I, you know, look, I mean, if I have, let's say a 350Z, I mean, are there some cool 350Zs that have 2Js in them? Absolutely, yep. Right? But, like, there's other engines you can make good power on, right?
VQs? I mean...
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, if you build a VQ, you can make really good power, mm-hmm. right? My stock bottom end VQ that's in my 350Z, which is twin turbo, like, that car makes, you know, 480. We detune it to 440 just to preserve the stock bottom end. Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, from that perspective. But, like, what's interesting about it to me is, like, and I remember, like, when Supras were, you know, the few and far between because they were so costly.
Okay.
Right?
Because, yeah, I don't remember that.
Well, but I'm just saying, like, I was playing with cars in, you know, in the late 90s, yep. early 2000s, and that's when those cars were just a few years old in most cases, depending on what year you got, and they were still pricey, right? And the same thing with NSXs and stuff like that. So, you know, when you think about it from that perspective, you know, those cars are fairly new still. And when people played with them, a lot of horsepower then, yes, times have changed, but was 600 horsepower.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I think it's incredible that those engines are still making, you know, relevant horsepower numbers in today. I mean, to the point where they're not dated at all.
Well, but the engines are good,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, an RB was good. Like, a 2JZ was good. Like, it, you know, and that's where, so let's talk about modern day engines. Because, you know, look, at some point, RBs, 2Js, all these motors, they're going to become the few and far between. At some point, they're going to run their course as far as being able to get them, not being able to want them.
I can't think about a similar scenario if you look back into even older stuff. Like, are there engines from the 80s that were top tier that have just died out just out of being old? Like, that you, oh, could, sure. that you could think of? Fuel-injected engines, at least?
Well, 80s and fuel injection wasn't, like, really a super...
Yeah,
super common thing. But I mean, like, let's even just take it back to the late 80s, early 90s. I mean, like, look, 4G63s.
Yeah.
We used to put them in a lot of different cars. People were doing a big popular swap. And when I say popular, I mean relatively popular, was cars like, you know, people putting 4G63s in FD RX-7s.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, in Starions, which I want to do.
You love the Starions.
I like Starions. Only now as much, anyhow. But you know, like, people were shoehorning those into some cars.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you always had people putting B series into different things back then. You know, K series are fairly new back in that time window.
Well, you said modern day engines. I don't think there's all that many incredible modern day engines. At least ones that get a ton of horsepower out of maybe like another inline six, which is not that many, or a four cylinder today. I mean,
I don't know about that.
If you want really good engines today, it feels like you have to get a V8. That's what it seems like to me.
Oh, I don't believe that.
What? So I can't.
Well, think of, I mean, look, you got a GR Corolla that has
3 liter, three, like, cylinder.
Yeah, 3 cylinder making 306 horsepower, right?
Right. Yeah, which is so hella impressive.
Super. Yeah. And then we saw the motor that hasn't come to fruition, which I want to come to fruition super bad, which was that 4 cylinder LS motor.
Right. Which never came.
That 3.6 cylinder. I know, but it bothers me because that's a really cool engine.
Right.
Like, come on, guys, let's get it together.
That was a GM engine.
It was because it was off of an LS design, essentially. Yeah. I mean, the levels to that engine being available are just mind-boggling.
What was it supposed to be? That was supposed to be a 4-cylinder...
It was a 4-cylinder, 3.6-liter LS-based engine where it was basically like if you took the one whole bank out of that V8, it had the same similar architecture, but a bigger bore. It had, you know, shared a lot of commonality between LS as far as the heads and stuff like that. And what made it cool was a lot of the parts that were used to make this engine, you know, rod bearings, caps, mains, all that stuff, they were all based off of LS architecture, which meant that there was already a lot of aftermarket support. I heard that they were planning on basically developing this engine for more of an industrial use, but the idea that you could take that 4-cylinder, 3.6-liter engine that makes like 500 foot-pounds of torque.
That's awesome.
It makes 300 foot-pounds of torque at like at like 1800 RPMs. That's diesel type stuff, right? So it's just very, it's a cool design, and I hope that comes to fruition. But currently you have the GR, right? I mean, let's go as far to look at the B58, which is used in the A90 Supra and in a lot of BMWs,
right?
I mean, mm-hmm. My dad's 440. My dad is a BMW, a 2020 440i, right? That car has the B58, right? I think you have, a few BMW engines that have fallen into that realm.
And the B58 is a what? It's an inline six turbo?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's cool. But, I mean, that's two engines. I could think of 10 notorious old engines that are still super relevant today that are just out there constantly. Well,
look, I'm not saying that they were the best engines, but you also had like the 4B11 that came in the Evos. That's and true. And the Genesis Coupe, the turbo ones,
which, right? Is so funny because we're talking about those are 10-year-old engines, which is so funny. 100%. Yeah,
but like when we start talking about like modern day engines, there's more of them out there. I mean, EcoBoost, the 3.5 liter twin turbo V6.
That's a good one.
You have the other smaller EcoBoost. You have that one GM motor that people are swapping into Miatas. It's a 4-cylinder. But, like, at the end of the day, they're not – it's not that it's an amazing engine, but, like, it is a newer engine that people are going to find their way to shoehorn in, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think the issue here is we are just on that cusp of, one, the RBs and the 2Js and the B series and the K series. Remember how much aftermarket support they have.
Right.
So being able to, have the recipe already loaded for you is done, right? You go and you say, like, you look for the guy that has already swapped, an RB into an S chassis. And then you're able to buy this ECU and this and this and this and this, and you're able to kind of plug and play it together, right? Even with a certain modification. But if you go the other route, if you go the route of taking like a B58 out of a new BMW, there's a couple things. The first thing is, one, it's still a really expensive engine because it's brand new. They're not in junkyards everywhere. It's not plentiful.
They didn't come in the most common cars.
They didn't. But, a lot of people get confused about this. There was a time where you could get a 2JZ pretty easily out of most junkyards.
Yeah, a non-turbo one.
Fair, right? But here's the thing: people will argue this point. Well, not the twin turbo motor. It doesn't matter if you're going to build that motor, right? And you use like, let's say, a block at an IS300. If you use a, one of the non-turbo blocks that would have come in like the SC300 or one of the Lexus cars or whatever, it didn't matter because you're talking about a block design that was differentiated by oil squirters or not. Okay, so when you put pistons and rods, aftermarket pistons and rods into one of these engines, you're not using the oil squirters most of the time anyway. And people are very particular about whether they feel the oil squirters should be used or not. So that's a debate in itself.
Okay. I don't know anything about that. So.
I understand that. Yeah. But you know what an oil squirter is?
Well, I didn't know that was such a debate.
Oh, yeah. There is a debate within that community about people that decide, like, whether they feel that the oil squirters are warranted or not. Now, I'll tell you this, without getting too much into that conversation, the 4G63 had oil squirters,
mm-hmm.
and we used to take them out all the time. And one of the reasons that we took them out was because there was always that fear that you were going to, with all that rotating mass, beefing everything up or whatever, you would somehow hit it or cause this disastrous issue.
Mm-hmm.
And that baby would just take your engine out. I think a lot of the conversation that happens with the 2J guys has to do with, by running the oil squirters, there's a thing about it lowering the oil pressure that's available to the rest of the engine.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is, if you don't need an underside of the piston squirter to be able to try to keep piston temperatures in control, because you're using aftermarket, forged components that you just eliminate the oil squirter altogether, because it restores kind of that engine oil pressure loss to maybe the rest of the engine, right?
Mm-hmm.
But again, going back to what I was just saying, like you get some of these engines in the junkyard, then it wasn't really expensive to get a brand new casted head from Toyota directly, and you were putting valves and retainers and all the good stuff, cams and springs and stuff like that. into the head anyway. So you were essentially building this thing with aftermarket parts. So you can go to a junkyard and find your starting place pretty easily. And a lot of people didn't really want VVTi, later Supra 2J heads on them, because there's this debate about, you know, which one flows better, which one, you know, whatever. So, I mean, that time is coming gone.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I mean, unless some people fight me like the K-Series stuff.
I don't think so. I mean, now I feel like when you try, if you were looking for an engine as someone who will potentially maybe do a K-Swap build in the future, like you yourself, if you were looking for an engine, I mean, I'm sure you would be thrilled if it sat somewhere around, you know, 50 to 70,000 miles on the engine, right? Like, you would probably feel comfortable with that, right? Or would you be looking lower or higher? I don't know.
I don't know. I guess it depends. I mean, if I was just going to drop it into a car and I'm not going to do anything to it, then yeah, I think that's a great thing if you really could find that verified, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you're going to build it, it may not make as much sense.
Doesn't matter.
May not.
Well, then it makes me wonder on then, like, you know, if people today are finding these engines with, you know, higher kind of more used condition or whatever, I mean, how much time is really left on them?
Ooh. I think it depends. There were some engines that were just super bulletproof, but there's all those things when you get a used engine, which is like, what was its maintenance life like?
Yeah.
Like, you know, did it see hard abuse? Like, you don't really know that stuff when you buy a used engine. I was never a fan of buying, like, used imported engines for the sake of dropping them into cars.
Let alone a built one, I guess, right?
Well, again, going back to the built thing, I think, you know, the tough part with the built standard is that, you know, you don't always know them. Now, listen, I will tell you that I've had cars before that I actually did buy a used built engine.
Mm-hmm.
But with that said, you know, I might have a project where my friend was partnered a car. I know the engine builder. I know what he bought. I saw the money that went into it. I know he didn't run the engine hard. Like, I had a lot of history connected to it. And so it was, to me, a way of fast tracking a build that I was working on. And usually getting a good deal on the whole thing. I didn't have to pay the engine to be assembled. There's a definitely decline in value once you have something that's already done, right?
Yeah.
Versus if you paid to build it.
Yeah, I feel that. One thing that I feel like kind of doesn't sit well with me or kind of annoys me a little bit is that when you, even us right now having this whole conversation, talking about some of these older things, all the engines that were mentioned came from non-luxury brands. And I feel like it's kind of when these manufacturers maybe had a little bit more kind of pride or kind of just more incentive to build really cool stuff. And now when you look at stuff from Mazda, Honda, Nissan, whatever it may be, Toyota, Mitsubishi, whatever, you don't get that kind of stuff anymore from them. Now you got to go to a luxury brand in order to find these kind of higher, you know, more sought after, you know, power engines.
I don't know if I agree with that.
Like, when I think about it, though, if you talk about the B58, that's a BMW engine.
Or an A90 Supra.
But it's also still a BMW engine.
Okay, but would you call an A90 Supra luxury?
No, but the engine's from a luxury brand.
Well, all right, let's skip this particular car, because I think this particular example, there's an argument here to be had separate.
I think there's some really good engines or whatever, and I think of maybe like the 5-cylinder for Audi or whatever it may be. But like, you know, we were just talking about all these other engines that came from more kind of, you know, not so luxury brands is what I'm getting at.
Okay. I mean, but here's the thing, like, you know, I mean, like, when I think about, like, and I know it doesn't fall into luxury, and this is why I said to you, like, I don't know if I agree with you.
Yeah.
Is because, like, when I think about luxury, like, I certainly don't think a GTR is a luxury car.
No, me either.
Okay. But it's a great engine in there.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like, you know, I think for the most part, I think some of the VQ, especially when you get the VQ, like 37s and 35s, like, they're pretty decent engines for what you get. I mean, there's a lot of flaws with them, I'll give you that, but but that's not a luxury brand. But it also does come in a luxury brand because they also use them in a lot of the Infiniti G35s and 37s and stuff like that. So I guess what I'm saying is I don't know that I feel that, like, the luxury brand is the deciding factor. I mean, I think there's still people that are making good engines. And in GR Corolla, whether that proves to be a really good engine or not, we don't really know yet. It's too soon, right?
Yeah.
But it is a cool engine on paper.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But, and that's why also I think there was so much great feedback from the GR Corolla in general. I mean, it's really cool to see Toyota making an engine themselves. They didn't do any kind of, you know, collab thing like the 86 or like the Supra.
Yeah, I guess. But you know, the one thing I don't want to lose sight is like, you know, there's been engine and platform collaborations between manufacturers forever.
Right.
You know, look at like, you know, even go back to Ford and, you know, in the 80s and that. And obviously you can go back further if you want to go to like Cosworth and stuff.
I was thinking
like
of the Stealth.
The Stealth?
Yeah.
Oh, I understand.
Yeah, Mitsubishi, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, but I don't know that the Stealth was really like a Mitsubishi. I don't really know that, to be honest with you.
Okay.
But let's look at the other way. I mean, like Hyundai used a version of the 4G63 in their Sonatas.
I didn't know that.
It was a 4G64.
Okay.
But all the head and the components, they were all pretty much identical. And then let's go around to Ford with the SHO early 90s Tauruses, right?
Mm-hmm.
The SHO used a motor that was actually, the top end was all built by Yamaha.
Oh, wow.
Right? And I believe there was also a Mazda collaboration
In the late 90s, that would make sense, yeah.
So there was, you know, there's been countless other ones, right, that have, you know, used similar platforms or engines. You know, we saw Subaru get involved with the FRS when that platform is going to build the BRZ. So, like, I don't think that there's anything that's, like, super revolutionary about there. Most of that comes from a cost perspective, right? It's them, you know, making world cars. And when you make world cars, there's a lot of homologation and different things that have to go into being able to make these cars work. And a lot of times there's a cost-effective way to do it, right? You know, and that, and then you have some cases where there's a lot of nostalgia and fanboyness that happens within a platform like the A90 Supra, and people were like tainted by the fact that it was, you know, had so much BMW-ness into it.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you this.
But I feel like it's rightfully so, because the original Supra came with the incredible, still relevant Toyota-built engine, which, okay, you know, people were probably upset to see that the engineers didn't do something so spectacular for the next generation.
Listen, it's fair, but I guess here's what I would say. Let's judge a book by its cover.
Sure. You're right? Not supposed to do that.
No, that's not allowed, right? So let's look at the A90 Supra real quick.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that car faster than a Mark IV Supra on paper?
Absolutely.
Does that car handle better than the Mark IV Supra on paper?
Yes, it does.
Is that engine every bit of what you would hope
to come into
a Supra?
Yeah.
So, like, this is where it gets.
That's a good one.
Then they put in a manual. They offered it in a manual transmission, obviously, more recently.
Doesn't sell. Hilarious.
I would argue that the Supra, as cool as it was, they probably shouldn't have branded it as a Supra.
Exactly. Exactly.
If that was the new upper end, if they used that body style and made that the new body style for the FRS, and then offered only the cool B58 in the upper things, I think you would have had a much more successful platform, because people would have bought it, but it also wouldn't have been nearly as much money until you got to that B58 option with all the stuff.
Yeah. Well, then it would be really weird to offer a car two tiers and two different engines that neither of them are Toyota engines. I feel like that's weird, but, you know.
What's the four-cylinder that's in there?
It's a Subaru Boxer engine.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, it's 2.0 or 2.4.
Hey, listen, you got to do what you got to do.
I mean, but, you know, but it's funny because it doesn't get the 86 doesn't get the backlash that the Supra does for not using a Toyota engine.
No, because I don't think those people cared. Plus, I also think that the FRS was a brand new platform.
That's really true. It doesn't have that. Really. It doesn't have the nostalgia behind it.
Right. And not only that, but Well,
people compare it to the old 86, the AE86.
Yeah, but it's not.
I know, but I mean, that's kind of where it does have some nostalgia in that point, actually. But even though it's a very different car.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. Just, I thought I would say that.
I mean, listen, I'll tell you right now that, you know, even for the dudes that were like super into like GSXs and Eclipses and DSMs back in the day, when that 3G and 4G Eclipse rolled out, we were all real salty.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That was not what we were. And then they made it a minivan or whatever they did, right? It's like a CUV
whatever
Crosstrek nightmare.
That was a bad decision.
And I'm sure that there's a lot of Mustang guys that are very perved over the fact that they did that Mach-E.
Yeah. All right. Well, I wanted to maybe I thought about my thought a little bit better now, and I'm gonna phrase it this way. The one thing that gets me a little bit upset though is that when you look at more modern engines, I'm not talking about the 4B11 or whatever it is, because it's a little bit older, and you know, that's almost 10 years old, or it is 10 years old at some point. Yep. But let's say the last decade or so, mm-hmm. when you look at a lot of the cool engines that, for me, if I look at them and I'm like, wow, that's cool, it gets me going. That's awesome.
All right.
I feel like a lot of them are going to be at higher cylinders. There's not that kind of more average K-series four-cylinder little strong four-banger that's out there that everyone can kind of have accessibility to and be like, man, that's like that readily available, drop it in tuner engine, have some fun, go do some stuff with it type of engine today. I don't see that in the last 10 years. You have to go to a V8 is what I feel like, or the coolest engine I've seen in the last like 10 years is the inline six turbo from Mazda. It comes on their family wagon, the big truck on the CX-90.
Oh, I don't know if, I mean,
like that's a cool engine, but you're not going to see those.
So the reason that some of these modern day engines don't get the same appeal is because of the fact that, look, the later engines have all been, I'm not talking about like the cool engines necessarily, but mm-hmm. like the later model engines, they've all been kind of, you know, made to be more efficient.
Yeah. Right.
And the efficiency is not the problem, because like I'll tell you, there's a lot of pros to having a direct injected engine,
mm-hmm.
which also helped with the emissions and different things like that. But, you know, I mean, it really did help with cars that had less displacement. You know, it really was something that actually, you know, could improve the way the car produced power, mm-hmm. right, with a smaller engine. But look, I think the recipes that we use, you know, different engines for swaps has everything to do with the ability to easily put it into another platform and adapt it to the current car, and the idea that you could potentially use a stock ECU and somehow make it work into a different platform. Because remember that when these engines became more efficient, they started to get more and more technologically advanced to the point where there was more technology in them, yeah. right? I mean, think about some of these engines back in the day. I'm not talking about VVTi stuff, but like even the stuff, you know, when you started adding variable cam timing in, variable valve timing, you know, I mean, back then VTEC was the most, you know, poppin' thing. And then, yeah. you know, there were, you know, obviously different engines, like the VQ does, especially as you get in the later models, they start to come out with, you know, timing adjustments and stuff like that. But, you know, look, as you get further now, so these engines became more complicated, which means they required more conditional mapping and tuning.
So it's more of a turnoff for people to go with as an option?
I think it just becomes difficult. And you start to find companies like, you know, like the Cobbs and the different things that get on board and make these maps and they tune, they, you know, they require a much more plug and play method to tune these cars, right? Mm-hmm. But that doesn't take an engine and then put it into another car and all of a sudden make it work.
Yeah.
Right? And so that's what some of these engines were so good for. And I bet you you'd probably have this same debate when you had this, the introduction of really having a lot more popular fuel injected cars
mm-hmm.
versus people that were very comfortable with carbureted cars.
Right.
Right? So at some point, RBs, 2Js, you know, even K-Series, although that's going to be for a lot longer because there are a lot more of them, even yep. though I was taken out of context in that clip that Max used, they got like a billion hits. Even though, you know, at some point, that stuff will dry up because people are yeah. going to go through them, they're going to get them, they're going to destroy them,
yep.
they're going to become lost pieces, whatever it may be. And then there's going to be some that are just worth a lot of money because they're the sole survivors. You know,
yeah,
pun, you know, whatever.
I think it's funny though, because my personal opinion is if we had this same conversation in 2030, if you and I had the same conversation in 2030, I don't think there's gonna be that much more stuff that comes into the conversation. I kind of feel like it's gonna be the same stuff that we're still talking about.
I don't know, man. I also think it's hard to relate to the fact that 2030 is only like, you know, 6 years away.
I know, but I mean,
5.5 years away.
Still more than half a decade. I mean, and
I guess, but like, you know, these platforms, they tend to ride with certain things for a while. They got to get the cost out of it, right? So, like, I just think that at some point, there will be a whole new like, these are the cool engines to swap into these cars, right? And that is going to change, and it is going to get more advanced. And
swapping these new batteries.
Well, look, I don't believe the EV thing is gonna go like that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
you think people are gonna start dropping in hybrid engines?
Not like we think they will. Not like in our type of segment. You know.
Yeah.
You know, I think that there's gonna be some engines that are, you know, used for a long time. I think just sheer numbers, K-series engines will do that.
Yeah. Right? I mean, hey, they're done making them, so, well, for the most part.
Right.
But besides the Type R, and the Accord, I guess. But that's a different K-series. But anyways, but yeah, I mean, the ones everyone wants, the K24s, I mean, and some of the older K20s, I mean, it's not that, I mean, they don't make them anymore.
No, they don't. And the people will argue that they do, but we're not talking about the same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? But, you know, I mean, K-Series and K24 did different things. And people will say, oh, well, the CRV in the 1 year. Stop. But, look, you know, I mean, when we get down the road, you're going to be, you know, and that's why, you know, that whole clip with Doug at Hondata with that whole L-Series swap, it wasn't that the engine was good.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't that the engine was cool. The point was that you're going to have to, there's going to be companies that are start to come out with more plug and play tunes. You could take, they got that thing set up so that it can be dropped into another platform using ECU and emissions and was passed, and you could put it into another car and do it in a plug and play fashion to the point where you can get it smogged or whatever it may be for places like in California where they have just much more strict emissions laws.
Yeah.
Right. I think that there's going to be stuff like that that will continue to exist because, remember, the EPA mandate that they talk about has everything to do with the modification of emissions components. But if you're swapping them into another place, that's not the argument, right? Like, in theory, let's say I get a really great deal on a B58, so the new, the, mm-hmm. you know, right? A B58 with an ECU and everything I need to make this thing run, and I don't modify the emissions, but I put it into, and again, this is such a drastic thing that would never happen, but, you know, I put that into, trying to think, like a regular Honda Civic Sport, like a new one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, now that Honda Civic Sport has a 6-cylinder turbo engine that we know out of the box is capable of making about 500 horsepower.
Yeah.
Is that Civic cool?
Ooh.
Well, is it?
I mean, it would, in my head, if I saw that, I'd be like, why?
Okay.
You know?
Well, when I look at you, I say, why with a Mazda Speed 3.
Uh-huh.
That car, listen, and I rode in that car. The car, for what it was, pulled pretty well, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Had it was peppy. It was strong. It was responsive.
Yes.
It made how many horsepower?
It's like 260 something.
Right. So you don't like the 400 horsepower whatever B58 that we're going to put into that same front wheel drive type platform.
Uh-huh.
But you like the 240 horsepower engine in
yeah.
Right.
I do.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
I guess what I'm saying to you is you double the horsepower in a similar size car
mm-hmm.
with similar, you know, it's front wheel drive, stuff
yep,
like that.
Yep.
So if you could do that in an affordable manner and know that you didn't have to worry about it, still can get inspected, the whole thing, that's the type of swap that Doug was talking about with the L swap going in. And I think that there's going to be more and more of those types of swaps that will pop up. And if they do go that way, you're going to find a whole new level of the way we tune things, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
I hear what you're saying. I think that makes plenty of sense. But to my point then, I just think that there's less readily available engines of, you know, the same kind of enthusiast nature on desirability on today. That's yes. what, you know, unless someone finds or cracks a code on like the engines, which I don't know what the engine code is for the ones that say they come in the more recent Altimas or something like that. Unless people crack the code on that, like...
I don't know if it's cracked the code, but here's the thing. I think that there's a lot of engines that are still slept on. Like, I don't think EcoBoost engines get nearly enough love for what they are.
Mm-hmm.
like those things are pretty dope.
Yeah.
And like, and they have the potential, you know,
and to, people normally prefer the V8. So, you know,
well, I mean, so like, but I mean, so you got EcoBoost motors, you got, you know, who knows? I mean, like even that little tiny three cylinder that they have in the GR Corolla. I mean, if you got, I mean, there's not that many cars of them, the, but
engine that came in my WRX is 2.4. That, yeah, that one, that's a pretty good engine too, I must say.
I don't have enough experience with it, so I can't really.
They're getting pretty good power out of those cars, but you know, hopefully they worked out a lot of the issues with all the other issues that the EJ motors had or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, but yeah, yeah, I mean that those are cool. Like when, but I don't know if people are going to be dropping that stuff, and you don't really see people dropping Subaru motors into other cars that aren't Subarus all that often. That doesn't happen.
Well, you know, look, the VR38 that's in the R35 is a pretty big engine. You know, especially you have to have the width between the strut towers.
That's a huge engine, but...
Yeah, you have to have the width between the strut towers. But, like, are there going to be things like that that are going to come? I mean, we say about Supra, but the truth is, do we get 15, 20 years down the road and, like, people are grabbing those B58s out of BMWs and stuff like that? Because there was enough of them, maybe not a billion of them, right? Not a case swap.
They came in a lot of cars. I mean, it comes in a lot of cars. So, I mean, that's a good example. And frankly, it's a very cool motor. So, you know.
Yeah, I mean, and again, you know, I mean, there's a lot of different things. But I guess what I'm saying is, like, you know, I think, you know, who knows? I mean, like, could a VQ end up being a junkyard, you know, find, and because there's so many of them.
I think the VQs are going to be the new SRs.
Well, I don't think so, though. The VQ isn't like inherently amazing engine, like, and I say that from experience. But
I would,
like,
say the same thing for the SRs, but
yeah, that's fair,
right?
Like, that's fair. I mean, yeah. Like, but even like, you know, the one thing I never really understood, and I guess it's just because it's so plug and play, was like the Miatas, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, how many people have 1.6s and go to the 1.8s?
Everyone, literally everybody.
That whole engine is like kind of junky technology.
Yeah, yeah,
like. You put a K-Series in it, and it looks like you just reinvented the rocket ship.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think there's a lot of things going in there, but, like, I do think that, you know, 2JZs and RBs, is, you know, as much as they're cool and stuff like that, I believe they're coming, like, kind of the statement engine, the flex engine, the thing that, you know, you get to open up the hood, and it's your candy that makes the build that much cooler.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, we're witnessing the absolute last leg of what some of these things will be worth, and they'll always be the nostalgia thing. And the B series is the same way. I mean, I personally believe that, again, my opinion, K series is a way better engine than B series.
Yep.
Right? But from a period standpoint, from a period correct, now all of a sudden B16s, B18s, they're popular again.
Yeah.
And they're going for good money now. When they were going for almost nothing at for a while.
I'm gonna flip it for this way though. I think the B series, for the value wise, is skewed itself just based on nostalgia. And I think everyone can realize that the K series motors are better just in general for power. Mm-hmm. But that's why when I think of stuff like the 2Js though, I don't think people are just buying the 2Js for nostalgia. I think they're buying them because they still are making completely relevant power today in 2024.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you, but I'll also say this about the 2J, right? The one thing about the 2J, and this is, often I think people gas RBs and 2Js up a little bit,
mm-hmm,
because they weren't the most easy to play with, and they weren't the most reliable. And I know some people will throw whatever at me for it, but, like, you know, you had to really work on, you know, getting rid of the air out of some of these 2Js. They were complicated to bleed as far as the coolant system goes. Like, you can make power and sure, but, like, you know, if you had to get rid of the dual turbo setup on some of those engines, just because of the fact that, like, if you've ever tried to route any hoses or whatever, what a nightmare. I mean, it's like a million hoses for emissions and all this different things, and you take one off and then all of a sudden, you know, the sequential system doesn't exactly work like it should. And you know, and RBs had their own issues and stuff like that, but yeah, there's a very cool element to when they're right, when everything's running right, like when you have them dialed, they can make a lot of power. So yeah. I'm not saying I don't disagree with that. I'm not saying, you know, I agree with you. I'm just saying that you get to a certain point, and I think that it's not just about power.
Yeah, I mean, also we want this whole podcast without really mentioning any LSs, but, like, you know, Obviously, those now are just so popular for almost all motorsports just because of what, I mean, incredible engine, super high torque application type of stuff, you know?
Well, and readily available in aftermarket support.
Right.
And I'll tell you the one thing, but that when we're seeing it already, like, you know, LSs will do the same thing, right? There's, first off, there's a million LSs, different generations, different things, whatever it may be. But, you know, like the one thing I remember back, even, I mean, it's crazy to think about this, but even if you go back, you know, almost 20 years ago, the cool thing was that there was an the 5.3 liter LS motors, right, were all the truck motors and stuff like that. And they were a dime a dozen. You can get them for like $400 long box, the whole thing. It's hard to find a 5.3 liter motor now. Like, and I don't mean like as far as finding one, but I mean find one for like cheap. Like people have went out and taken them and used them in projects and done cool things with them and used them in derbies and, you know, done all these things. And now, you know, you're really starting to see that, well, you know, you have the next level. And I believe that there's still a good value here. Look, if I had an extra storage unit, I would stock a bunch of, there's a bunch of different engines. I think I would stock knowing that, like, I believe that they're all going to go up in value, especially as we go on.
Yeah. I mean, also another engine that's modern that is really, you know, kind of taking over and people are loving it are the Coyote engines, I guess, you know.
Yeah.
Those are like proven to be really, really good. But I think it's just me that it kind of just makes me upset that there's no like really sought after super fucking, I'm sorry, just curse, but any four cylinder engines out there right now that are more modern that are kind of putting down that kind of power.
I don't know. Look, I think I
love a lot of the kind of four-cylinder turbo cars. That's kind of like where my heart is for a lot of stuff.
I think that there, you know, and I'm drawing a little bit of a blank, but I believe that there are those four-cylinder turbo engines that are out there, right? Like, look, but like the 2.0 Accord motor,
yeah,
is a good example of that, right?
Right,
right. And there's going to be a lot of those,
which is a Type R engine,
right? But different, but in the Accord, it's different architecture.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
So I think there still is those engines. There's a lot more platforms, I'm sure, that we're totally missing on this podcast. But
if I thought about the ones right now today that are still being made, I feel like I think of that 2.0 out of the Accord. I think of the 2.0 out of the GTI Golf R EA888 engine, the one that I had in my WRX, and I feel like that's about it. I mean, you said the three cylinder out of the GR Corolla.
I don't know that I think it's about it.
I can't think of
there's
much
a
more.
Lot of cars and trucks right now coming with four-cylinder engines. The problem I have is I don't know enough about them. For example, like, I know, let me put it this way. Like, what about the new, the 2.0 that Volkswagen has put out, right? They're using them in Atlases, they're using them in GTIs, they're using them all over the place, right? Mm. And the Atlas motor makes 276 horsepower or whatever it may be. I don't know that it's a great motor or not, but like, we don't know. I don't know.
I just missed a little bit more of kind of like diversity and I guess competition, I guess. Like even you could even find yourself against a, you know, with a Chevy Cobalt SS or something like that. And like even those were putting out pretty good power, you know, at some point. Like, yeah, I don't know. It was just more diversity of options is where I'm kind of going for. And I miss that kind of competition between the manufacturers.
I think they're getting it. They're just getting it in different directions.
Yeah. It feels like a lot less to me.
Yeah.
You know?
I guess, I mean, I can understand the feeling. I'm not sure if it's accurate, though.
I feel like when you really look at where they're kind of putting a lot of that engineering efforts, I feel like it goes into the V8s and stuff like that. That's what it feels for me.
Yeah, but a lot of cars are not coming with V8s. More cars are probably coming with four-cylinders than six-cylinders at this
point. I know, but a lot of the cool engines, I feel like, they're just kind of just going the V8 route.
I don't know that I agree with that, but I have to really think about that to be able to give an accurate statement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, when Porsche did the four-cylinder, no one liked that, obviously. The ones in, like, the 718 came in and stuff like that.
Okay.
And I think that's cool as hell. I don't know.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, they're boxer engines.
Yeah, I think it's, I don't know. But they didn't really resonate very well with anyone.
Yeah, I get you.
So,
all right, before we wrap this thing up, so the question to those that are listening or those out there, what are the engines you think that are available today, 2024 circa, that will potentially populate the aftermarket used department for swaps later on in the future, right?
Once all these other ones kind of start to die out and become right, less and become and less,
harder to get. Mm-hmm. And you know, what are the things that you really feel, you know, some of these enthusiasts are going to look for to be able to say, yeah, that's an engine. Is it, you know, is it just reliability, or is it the ability to, you know, take something that maybe is, you know, new and has all the pieces, but then use aftermarket, you know, pistons and rods and stuff like that, and then make it into a really efficient monster, but you have a good base. So, like, what are the thoughts that kind of keep you into, like, picking an engine for a future swap, and what are those current engines that may kind of supersede some of the most popular 4Gs and 2Js and RBs, mm-hmm. and K-series and, you know, whatever it is.
I would also frame the question on, do you think that some of those older engines like 2Js and RBs and whatever
are really that good?
Yeah. Like, do you think that was it? That was as good as it gets? And, you know, like...
That's it. Listen, I don't know. Hear the opinions. So
yeah,
if you have comments, throw them down below. That's it for this one. We're going to get out of here. We're going to go do some work. We have wheels to sell. We have Mark 1s to polish. We're going to get it on. Take care of yourself. We'll catch you here next Wednesday.